morning. My name is Peter. I am an alcoholic. As I'm preparing for this discussion, I was thinking to myself, if you had asked me a month ago, you know, how long I've been drinking, I would have said 30 years. But as I was thinking back over my own history, it's like it's been closer to 45 years that I've been an alcoholic. Of course, a lot of that I wouldn't admit it. I want to start my story talking about my father, because he was a combat veteran in World War II. He was a corporal. His job was to lay down cover fire for his patrol as patrol was advancing forward. He landed in Normandy a few days after the invasion, and his company was charged with beating the Germans through France. And as I'm watching the History Channel, and I'm actually seeing film footage of what he went through, and I'm relating the stories that he used to tell me, just a couple of weeks ago I saw this film where General Curtis LeMay, to beat the Germans, actually dropped bombs along the entire line, and part of it hit our own troops, and that kind of coincides with the stories my father would tell me about seeing his comrades flying through the air. That man must have been terrified of what he was going through. Now, I bring that up because in my story, I grew up with a man who was a factory worker, and he would go to work in the morning, and then he would come home, and he'd have his six-pack sitting on in the refrigerator, and he would watch TV all night long. And he would just finish that six-pack every day. And as he grew up and I got to know him more, I found out that, you know, when lunchtime came, he would go across the street to the bar. He would have lunch at the bar. He didn't drive a car, but what he would do is he would take the bus home. And, of course, there was a bar at every bus stop. So, of course, while he's waiting for the bus, he'd be in the bar. And then he'd get off the bus, he'd go to the bar, and then he'd come home and he'd have a six-pack. And that's the man I grew up with, who was kind of emotionally distant as a father. So today I can recognize that as that the man has suffering from PTSD from what he's seen in combat. And I have to, as an adult, I give him a lot of credit for that. But as a child, it's like, what the hell's going on? I don't have a father. My mother suffered from manic depression. And when she had her episodes, she had an issue where she was just very angry at her sister for some event that I had no idea what was going on. Of course, I'm, you know, an 8-year-old boy. I don't know what's going on. So when she had a serious episode, the issue was, well, they would hospitalize her. And if you're from New York, and if I mention the word Kings Park, Pilgrim State, Creedmoor, you know that these are institutions for people who have mental health issues. Well, they were less hospitals and just as much prisons as they were hospitals. So in terms of my childhood, I grew up with two parents who were somewhat had their own emotional issues that they were dealing with. And I became kind of a foster child with my family, pretty much raised by my grandmother. And thank goodness for her, because she really made me the person I am today. Every time I lied, and she caught every one of them, and I was black and blue when she was done with me. So, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, that kind of thing. She didn't spare the rod, not at all. And my father was saying, oh, you're lucky. You know, you only got a belt. I got the cat of nine tails. So, I really thank her for what she did for me. But in terms of my own development, this kind of created a personality where I became very comfortable in my own company, because I'm an only child, so I just entertained myself quite a bit. Now, in terms of watching my father, I said, I'll never drink like that. I kind of grew up saying, no, that's not going to be me. And when I got out of school and I started working, I was working down the Wall Street area, and I'd come there with social events, and sometimes we'd get together after work, and I'd have a drink or two or three or four, and to me it was social. I don't know if I was an alcoholic at that point just yet. But then, of course, on December 1st, 1969, the government had a draft, and they had a lottery, and I won. I was going to get drafted. It's like, well, you know, I've seen film footage of Vietnam, and like I see, you know, people my age getting carried off the field in body bags or something. I didn't quite understand Vietnam. And if you're a Vietnam veteran, you served there, I really salute you, but I couldn't do it. So I joined the Navy instead. And I did 4 years in the Navy, and I got drunk four times. So I'm thinking, well, that's not bad. I only got drunk four times. So I did my tour of duty, got out, and in short order, I got married. And on my wedding day, I didn't have a drink. So that's fine. So, of course, life goes on. A child comes along. I'm trying to put together the chronology of what's happening here. So, and we were living on Long Island. My in-laws were in Brooklyn, and we would take our laundry on the weekends. We'd drive in, and my father-in-law had a bottle of whiskey on his sideboard. So every time we came in, I would always start taking a drink. And I don't know how many I had, but as I'm preparing for this speech, I'm realizing that's when my alcoholism started. Because now I'm starting to drink on a regular basis. And then I'd buy my own alcohol, and I became an evening drinker. So the chronicism, how do I say this? Let me take a breath. So I just started drinking every evening, just a couple of drinks at first, and it didn't seem to be affecting me. But I'll tell you one thing, if I drank red wine, I know I would get angry. It would provoke my anger. But as I went further on in my, there's a lot of chronology, a lot of different things, I'm trying to sort them out. So as the marriage is moving forward, you know, the stress of being married and raising a family and not having enough money is going on. And there's a couple of things that happened, and it was a communication issue between my wife and myself. And there were a couple of events that happened that triggered my anger. You know, I lost a couple of discussions with her. She was very good at getting her way. And I became an evening drinker. You know, and I started ruminating over these issues. Let me be blunt. One of the issues, I came home one day very innocently. I said I wanted to go back to college and work on a degree. And she shot me down, and I couldn't understand that. And I became dumbfounded at her response. So I got angry. And I went out, and I started supporting that anger with alcohol. And it just became, it started snowballing at that point. So now this is somewhere in the 80s, and so from the 80s on, I just started drinking on a regular basis in the evenings. But I was okay during the daytime, so I'm thinking I don't have a problem. One day I mentioned to my doctor how much I was drinking. I said I was drinking about a box of wine a week. And he said, go to AA. So I went to an AA meeting, went to one, like, this is not for me. There's another period in time when I got a phone call one day, and my son had been arrested for selling drugs on school property. It was a pretty very serious crime. He was looking at 6 months in jail. So I was upset and beside myself, didn't know what to do. So I called somebody I knew who was a retired sheriff, and he helped me out. He pointed me to a good lawyer, and basically the end of that story is my son was a youthful offender, and we got his record sealed. But during that time, I was upset, and I was trying to find some social support. So I went to this support group at a local hospital, and they asked me, well, do you drink at all? So I said, well, I have a glass of wine. You're an alcoholic! I said, no, I'm not. No. And they really tried to change my thinking. And I needed help because I was really upset over what my son had been through. But eventually that passed. So where I'm getting to is, as I'm trying to in my alcoholism, I'm still not accepting the fact that I've got a drinking problem. So I'm moving forward. I'm still angry at my wife because that's now a regular thing with me. In the evenings, you know, when the house is asleep, you know, I go out in the backyard, either wine or whiskey, doesn't matter, I'm drinking. So that episode with my son happened just before I was relocated to Georgia. We moved down here in Georgia in 97. It was a corporate relocation. It was a good deal financially, so we accepted and moved down here. About a few years after we moved down, I got laid off, It's like, all right, now what? So I'm struggling to find a job. And finally I found a job working for the Navy. They needed civilians to crew their supply ships. And I'm thinking, yippee! It's kind of like getting divorced without having to go through the paperwork. So now, it's true. It's actually, it was a good deal. It's like, I'm not with my wife anymore. I'm alone. It's like, I'm divorced. And being civilians on a ship, they're a little bit more lax in terms of drinking. If you know, when I was active duty, it was like they would do regular searches and, you know, you really couldn't drink. But as a civilian, if you got your job done, it was kind of, how do I say, it was tolerated as long as you got your job done, with a very few exceptions. So my drinking started escalating again. And of course I found some drinking buddies. So, for the 12 years I did that job, I started, becoming more of a drunk. In that period, I also managed to have an affair. And it was great at first, or so I thought. But as time went on, I really started, my upbringing and my value system started coming in force. And this is where I think I started changing my thinking. Because I realized how, I have to make a decision. And it's like, I really love this woman. And I started realizing, as angry as I was with my wife, I did love her. So I said goodbye to the other woman. It was a very painful experience. And then, of course, for the next year, I'm going back in the fans, hold my ship, my cigar, my flask, and I'm just nursing. Now, I'm still angry at my wife, and I'm also suffering the loss of this woman. And moving forward. But what that experience taught me is that there was a lot of pain in that, and I was really in remorse for the pain that I had caused all these people. It really hurt three of us, the three people involved in that pain. And I swore I'd never do that again. So, moving forward, at this time, I'm really struggling with the anger and the bitterness. And there is a, I did my best to reconcile with my wife over a number of issues. One, over the affair, she forgave me over that. But now I'm trying to let go of this anger I've got. And that is a really hard thing to do. I've been struggling with that anger for a long time. So the anger and the alcohol were working together hand in hand. I think one was reinforcing the other. And letting go of my anger and forgiveness, that was tough. You know, people say just let it go. It's not quite that easy. I had a priest years ago, he admonished the congregation, just remember the Lord's Prayer is the most important prayer we have because it's the one that Jesus gave us. And so I started saying that on a regular basis, and I periodically, all the time, I parse different sessions of it. You know, we get to that, forgive us our trespasses, we forgive those. Trespass against us. It's like easier said than done. So at one point I had found some religious website and I was studying forgiveness and how to let go of this anger and the pain that I was feeling. And in the New Testament it says that we're supposed to forgive 70 times 7, which means it takes a long time to let go of these things. So I'm still struggling with it. My wife gets ill. She has cancer. She developed lung cancer. And so I retired to take care of her. And eventually she passed. Of course, the day, and before she passed, by the way, I had, she passed in April, the Christmas before we were visiting our son. And I had just drank the night before and had just terrible hangover. It's like, I can't do this shit anymore. Oh, God, I can't drink like this anymore. So I stopped. I was actually went on an AA website and I started reading. It's like, yes, I am an alcoholic. It's like, It's kind of the first time I think I seriously admitted that I had a problem. And I stopped drinking. And that was about 4 or 5 months before she died. So that whole period, that transition, before I really was, had not been drinking. And now I actually went to AA with intent. I went to a different group. I sit there and it's like I took a, picked up a white chip. So, okay. Went to a couple meetings. I did some shares. And I was sharing this. There's one person there who said, I want to just say what a nice group you are. I've been coming here for a year and a half. And you guys are a great bunch of people. I left that group because there was one person after I shared, either that night or the night before, this person said, if you didn't put a gun in your mouth and consider pulling the trigger, you don't have a problem. I'm like, well, I'm not coming back here anymore. So then I found you guys here, and I think, Damon, I remember you being here. But I came to a couple of meetings. It's like, all right, I got this. I don't need to come to meetings anymore. And so I stopped coming to meetings, and then that November, Thanksgiving was coming. It's like, well, it's almost time to, you know, celebrate Thanksgiving. Maybe I can have a drink. 7 years later, I finally came back in these rooms. So one thing I learned from that is to, is that I need to keep coming to these meetings because it's the support I get from being in the meetings, reminding myself that I have a drinking problem and I need to come to these meetings to stop drinking or to keep myself from stop drinking. In fact, I got tempted a few weeks ago, you know, just the thought of, you know, whiskey would be good about now. It's like, no, I can't do that. I need to get back to the anger issue because that was a big part of my alcoholism, is just how angry I was and trying to purge myself of that anger, which is such a very difficult thing to do. And kind of running out of time, I'm getting to the end of what I want to talk about already. But prayer became helpful. I know we've had discussions here about prayer and there are different opinions about it, but you know, I've been a prayerful individual most of my life. You know, sometimes it's rote prayer, sometimes it's just casual conversations with my God. But sitting in the back over here, I think it was September 2022, I had just stopped drinking. It was about the third or fourth week here, and we said the morning prayer, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. At that moment, I kind of felt relief. I had this little thought in my head, it's like, look, Pete, it's history. You can't change what happened. It's it's done. And then as I was working steps 4 and 5, I'm realizing that a lot of these issues I'm yelling at my wife for, they're my fault. I had to accept my responsibility. I just didn't speak up for myself. It's that simple. It's a simple communication issue that I just, it was easy for me to just cast blame on, well, it's your fault. Oh, it's my fault. Had to try to become an adult, and they said, this is my responsibility. I did these things. So I learned that I'm an alcoholic. I just, you know, I can't drink anymore. Sometimes I'll, you know, offer you a drink, say, nope, reach my lifetime quota, can't do it anymore. And but that's it, you know. So if I wanted to continue talking, it's about resentment. It's about anger and how I struggled with letting go of those things. I don't know, Damon, where do I go now?
Amends.
Well, I can't communicate with that other woman, but that's one of the amends I can't make. But I pray for her. I hope she's well. After my wife passed, a few months later, I met Kimberly, and she's with me now. But on day one, I said, I'm not getting married. I did my 40 years, so I'm not doing another 40. But it's true. And but I told her right off the bat, you know, I did have an affair, and I told her I was an alcoholic. And I promised her, you know, I would never go to another woman because that's just too painful. But in terms of amends, I keep thinking about, who do I have to amend? And if anything, it's my children. I keep thinking about my two sons. I guess, yeah, this is something else I want to talk about. Because growing up, watching my father drink like that, and how distant he was from me, it's like I promised myself that when I became a parent, I wouldn't do that with my children. And I tried to be very involved in their lives as they were growing up. And even today, I'm trying to stay close to them. And, you know, thank you, you triggered something I need to talk about. By the way, that son who had who got arrested, he's now a critical care nurse over at Wellstar. So if you have heart problems, you want him to be your nurse. That's water. Anyway, I tried to become a good parent. I did the Cub Scout thing. There were soccer. I tried to be involved in my children's lives. Was I a perfect father? Absolutely not. There were times I screwed up royally, especially when I was drinking. I know if I drank red wine would make me angry. It just, that was the nature of that particular alcohol. What got me back into the room where I reached my high bottom was September 5th, 2022. I was over my son's house, my younger one. I have two sons, my oldest and my younger. They're 45 and 38, respectively, today. And my youngest son he has two children, and we had all been drinking that day. And my youngest son starts wrestling his son, and it starts getting energetic, for lack of a better word. And the two of them are on the floor, they're wrestling, and it's getting serious. And we're all recognizing this, it's like, No, this is too much. You got to stop. So my daughter-in-law tries to get involved and break him up. My son pushes her away. She falls on the floor. She gets hurt. Furniture gets broken. Fight gets broken. And then my son is sitting over there, and he's on the floor with this look of stupor on his face. He's just got this drunken stare. And that was my high bottom. That's the moment I said, I have to stop drinking. Not because I feel shitty in the morning, but because I got to be a parent and try to be a role model for him. So September 6th, 2022 was the day I stopped drinking. And I came back into these rooms a few days later. And I've been coming in ever since. And my son still drinks. You know, he knows he has a drinking problem. But all I can do is try to be a role model for him. And maintain my sobriety. I think that's my story. I don't know if I can do much more on that. Again, the big thing for me is the anger and the resentment, how hard it was to let that go. It was just a continual prayer and working on it and accepting my part in the events of my life. You know, I'm responsible for what happened to me, not someone else. Yeah, I can talk about I was dealt a raw deal as a child, you know, with two parents who were emotionally distant, who had their own issues to deal with. But, you know, that's the life. That's the hand I was dealt, and it made me the person I am. I'm kind of very comfortable in my own company. So if I'm sitting there very quietly, I'm not angry at anybody. Just that's how I grew up. So I got to thank people like Tim, because when I first walked in the door, I think it was you who just welcomed me and introduce yourself and sat down, and I'm still learning names because that's one of my great weaknesses. I have a tough time remembering names. So I hope you get something from this presentation. If just one of you can take some value from what I've said, I feel like I've accomplished something. But let go of the anger. I mean, it's not an overnight thing. It just took me years and years and years to let it go. And I like to think I'm finally free of it, but and just keep praying on it. Say two. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.